This is One Heat Minute.
Drop of a hat, these guys were rock and roll.
What's your name?
Wayne Bro.
Look like gangbangers, working the local 7-Eleven. Robbery, homicides, take it out.
Give me all you got! Give me all you got!
I do what I do best. I take scores. You do what you do best. I'm trying to stop guys like me.
A podcast dedicated to all 170 minutes of Michael Mann's L.A. crime opus Heat.
Ladies and gentlemen,
1 minute welcome to at One a time. Minute.
I'm your host, Blake Howard. And joining me today is a guy with a stunning resume of contributions all around to some of the coolest movie publications going. A guy who I read the most in his most recent assignment because he gave probably the most thorough, I'm going to call it like a compendium, and almost like a thesis on the entire Mission Impossible franchise. You would know him from things like Cut Print, Ebert Voices, Mashable, Nerdist, Empire, Bright World, Dark Room, and Little White Lies, just to name a few. But he is a staff writer for Slash Film. His name is Chris Evangelista. He also gives great Twitter, and I was very, very looking forward to chatting to him on One Heat Minute if we could make it work, and we have. So Chris Evangelista, thank you so much for being a part of One Heat Minute. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
I'm sorry that introduction maybe had you a little bit on the back foot, but there we go. So yeah. Look, we're at the 102nd minute Michael Mann's 1995 crime opus. Chris has the unfortunate and I think very fortunate role of backing up after Bill Duke and Dante Spinotti. So we're going to dive into this minute. Chris and I are going to watch it together. It's kind of a jam-packed minute right as we run into this heist. And then I'm going to pick Chris's brain about gauge him on his Michael Mann fandom, talk about the minute at hand, and then we'll talk about all the other things that we love to talk about on the show. You guys know the format. All right, let's jump into it. Chris, you and I are going to watch it. You guys are going to listen. I'm going to come back and talk about it.
What's burning? Kick him up. What is this? Where do you think you're going?
Chris, good minute.
It is. It's shocking how much happens in that 1 minute. There's so much going on. It's amazing.
Yeah. I was refreshing myself as a Jew, and I'm just like, God, we jump in three different sequences. We have huge fallout from the previous minute with that great sort of, you know, it's almost like a life and death offer that happens between Neil and Don Breeden, you know?
Yeah.
You know, to take it or leave it. And we get a fantastic, we get Bud Cort getting his comeuppance, which I think we're all cheering for him, throwing that jerk dirtbag down in the kitchen. And then we get some sort of establishing shots, the calm before the storm that we haven't seen in any other part of this movie. And then obviously that wonderful little electronic theme as Neil wanders into this bank in full kit, ready to go.
Yeah. It's there's so much going on, but there's so, it's interesting that the way it cuts to those two female characters and then it cuts to, Neil going into the bank, because I'm wondering how much time goes by between Bud Cort getting thrown into things to De Niro walking into that bank. Cause it seems, you know, in the film it's, you know, a minute obviously, but I always wonder how long, you know, that time frame is.
It doesn't feel long.
No,
because you've got to think he walks out, he's exit stage left in the preceding minute to this one, which is the 102nd minute. So if you're looking at your dials, again, the original theatrical cut of Heat, 1 hour 41 minutes to 1 hour 42 minutes. He's exited, and it's some phenomenal phenomenal individual performance work from Dennis Haysbert there, sort of taking it all in, and literally, you know, things are burning before, while he's making the decision. So you know that this can't go well. Everything's burning in the kitchen. Alarms are going off. People are being thrown places. But I think it's like, it's just that brief pause. But if we remember, like, De Niro's in that kit when we see him make the offer. Like, he's there, right. He's there in that cafe where Dennis Haysbert's character Don Breeden is. He's there, like, ready to rock and roll. Like, they're walking out the door. I need a driver right now to take me to this bank. So it's almost like, it's not quite 2 minutes, but it's probably 10 or 15 minutes in the grand scheme of this movie.
Yeah. Very cool.
What do you like? I mean, you're a fastidious person for detail and time and pace. You know, particularly if anyone's read any of your Mission Impossible stuff, you talk a lot about, you know, there's a real craft when it comes to, like, pacing out tension in these moments. What do you think of those, besides the character-y moments, what do you think of those, like, sort of pacing delivery moments of those two female characters? Because I think of them as, like, these big inhales now. Maybe it's because I've watched this movie so many times. It's like, oh, here we go, like, these are lives that are never going to be the same again in just a couple of minutes.
Yeah, it's interesting. So you have, like, Amy Brenneman. She's just going about her day, and she's obviously completely oblivious to what De Niro's character actually does. And then you have Ashley Judd, who knows all about what her husband does. And they're on these opposite sides of the spectrum. You know, one of them is completely oblivious. One of them probably knows the job is going down today, but they both seem perfectly calm. Like, nothing, it seems like nothing is on either of their minds, and they have no idea that everything is about to change in, like, a matter of moments.
Yeah. I love the Ashley Judd one, because you watch Edie, Amy Brenneman, and you're like, exactly right. She's just stacking a box of books. There could not be a more boring task in the world than packing a box full of books. It's so monotonous. It's like, this is what I'm doing. And then Ashley Judd, just with a coffee and a kid on the the dining table in the kitchen, is just sitting there, like, morning coffee, morning news is on. This is just another day. But those two scenes, like you said, like, they couldn't be more contrasting. One is someone who's completely oblivious, another person who's, like, completely aware. And we know she's the savviest character probably in the whole film. So seeing her there, it's just like, wow, this is very staged and very calm.
Right. And it's a perfect illustration of one of my favorite things about this movie is that it takes the time to show that these people are just quote unquote, like, normal people. Like, they may do, you know, Pacino is a cop and De Niro is the master thief, but Michael Mann is really obsessed with showing their really ordinary lives, like, you know, going out to eat and troubles at home. Yeah. It's, you know, other people have said this too, but, like, this one movie is like an entire season of television packed into, you know, these hours.
Yeah. And it's like that weird borderline, because, you know, you and I are pretty familiar with, you know, the era of Netflix shows, but, like, a Netflix show that has 10 hours sometimes, or 13 hours to breathe. Sometimes you're like, they should have just been given 6 episodes. Like, yeah, 6 episodes, absolutely. They would have done this. They would have done it better. I think that's, like, that weird thing that Heat is this kind of halfway between what could have been, like, a short form series, but it is a piece of cinema. So they have to even be more economical. There's not a drop of fat in my mind on this movie as far as, like, nah, that scene's got to go. It's deflating the pace when we need it to speed up, those sorts of things. But it does take its time with, like, the full middle core of the movie, having all these conversations with all these characters, all these people, you know, pure human drama before we get into this moment. It's so cool to talk to you about this specific moment, because I struggle, and I want to ask you, is, like, I struggle to remember what it's like not knowing that this heist is coming, you know, because once you've seen it, it's almost like it has this indelible mark on your memory. It's there forever. But that little silly, like, flutter of music that's sort of the your heart rate completely getting jacked as these guys are calmly walking into this bank. It's such a cool moment. It's such a cool moment.
It is. It's interesting because, you know, obviously we turned it off right when it's about to get good, and I felt myself being like, ah, like, I want to see the rest of it. But at the same time, I've never watched it this way, where I've never really noticed how coolly De Niro like strolls into the scene until having to like stop and watch that, you know, that second before everything starts. And it's such a, you know, obviously, even if you had never seen this movie before, you know, the whole movie they're talking about, you know, the big bank job. So, you know, this is it.
Yes.
And the very, I don't want to say laid back, because that music, I guess it's a stunning contrast, because De Niro is very cool. He's very calm. I mean, that's his character in the movie. And he's taking this like leisurely stroll into the bank, but the music is like this intense, like, oh my God, something really like insane is about to happen right now. And it's just that interesting contrast where, you know, Michael Mann is sort of like just building us into this, this all time incredible bank robbery sequence. I always wonder, when they were filming this, if they had any inkling of like, oh, this is going to be iconic. Like, this is, people are going to be talking about this specific sequence. Because I remember even when Heat came out, this was all anyone was talking about, was this scene, like the big, the big banks. Like, that's all anyone could talk about. Even people who didn't like the movie were just like, oh, that bank robbery scene, you know? And I always wonder, like, when you're shooting something like that, if you just stop for a minute and you're like, oh, this is going to be legendary, or if you can't even think in those terms. I always wonder about that.
It's so interesting, right? Because you know, I wonder about that too. And I wonder the difference between film, like filming on film 35 mil and digital. And so, you know, when we're looking at Heat, they're not maybe getting as immediate a look at everything that they're actually pulling together. So like in a digital world, when you look at it, and I think there's some great, you know, in the, you know, knowing the Mission Impossible fan you are, you've probably heard that great Empire chat with Chris McQuarrie, and they're talking about like they're looking at some of the dailies and looking at the lenses and making some director, you know, some visual adjustments, aesthetic adjustments, because things aren't looking fast enough. You know, Tom Cruise is flying on cobblestones on a motorcycle, and they're like, we need a 135 mil lens here. It's going to make it look better. And so they make that decision. But I wonder in the 95 movie landscape, if they've got that sort of sense. But you can imagine, like, they knew innately there that the sound from the gunshots that were reverberating in real time needed to be recorded on set. So you got a feeling that they know that the atmosphere, at least, they're creating is unlike anything that's been seen in a movie before. And, you know, you get someone at the peak of, like, his, you know, sort of method intensity with, like, Val Kilmer, you know, changing magazines in the upcoming scene that like Marines play to other Marines, going, if you can't change a fucking magazine as quickly as this actor can, get out of my core, you know? So like, I'm sure they had to have gotten the feeling like that.
Yeah.
This is like, or at least if they took a look at some of those dailies, that they'd be going, wow, this is coming good. This is looking so good.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. So you're a fan of Michael Mann, Chris? I've sort of waxed lyrical about your fandom of, you know, particularly the MI series. But like, are you a guy that's been a fan of Michael Mann for a long time? This one of your faves of his?
Oh yeah, this is definitely up there for me. It feels so basic to say this is my favorite Michael Mann, but it really is such a good movie. I've seen this movie so many times, as I'm sure obviously you have too, but every time I watch it, it just feels fresh and exciting, and it has this pulse to it that so few movies do. But there's so many movies of his I love. I think like after this would be The Insider, which is such a different movie than
completely.
It's that movie is phenomenal. And Collateral, of course. What else? Thief. You know, I pretty much love all of his movies up to Public Enemies, and that's where I started to tap out a little bit. I don't really like Public Enemies, and I know Black Hat has its defenders, but I'm not there yet. I have yet to see that director's cut.
You and me both. We need to see. I need to see this director's cut. And in Australia, we haven't been lucky enough to have the option, and particularly that there's an Aussie lead, which I at the time. It was maddening that it wasn't even released in Australian cinemas. Like Chris Hemsworth is like one of the top five movie stars in the whole world, and it didn't come out here. And I was like, God, there must be something with this movie. It must be getting pretty poor reviews. But yeah, no, I'm not a Black Hat defender just yet myself. For context,
yeah, I want to be, because there are so many people in the film community who just love to defend Black Hat. But I remember seeing that. And just sitting in the theater and just being miserable, just being like, "Oh, why is this so bad?" But I would love to lay eyes on that director's cut just to see if it changes my mind, or maybe I should just go back now that I've already had my my expectations dashed, and now that they're lower, I might like it more because I haven't seen it since theaters.
Yeah, but I had a weird. I'm wondering about your reaction, because with Man, I adored Miami Vice on first watch. It's really funny, and now, especially there's a lot of writing recently, and there's a lot of, great people in the film community that are talking about like, oh, this is one that people just got wrong. Like they just misinterpreted. This is a great film. And I just remember at the time being on that island by myself, like that island where those Black Hat defenders are. And I was like, Miami Vice is like one of his best movies. I don't even know what you're talking about. This is a great, like everyone with your criticisms, stop. Like this movie's phenomenal. Like this is, aesthetically, performances, writing, crisp pace, it comes with that pace. And I think in this scene, like it just shows you Man is such a great manipulator of what he wants you to feel in any given moment. Like you said, De Niro looks like he's strolling down Central Park right now and he's walking into this bank. Like he doesn't, it's so casual, it could be a romance, almost as he walks into this bank. But that particular really distinct choice of that music in that moment, it fills you with an unease, and you've never even seen the film. You're like, something big is going to go down here, and my heart's already beating more, my pulse is already up, my hands are sweating, and I don't even know why. And it's just this music, this earworm that's in there sort of getting you jazzed for this particular sequence to come through.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, and I too, I just want to back up and say, I too love Miami Vice. And yeah. I never understood the hatred for it. I actually just rewatched that recently. And it's so good.
It's so good. I think people were distracted by Colin Farrell's mustache. I really think there's so much of criticism started with that sentence. What is with his mustache and mullet? I'm like, is that all you saw? Is that all the movie was in like 2 and a bit hours?
Yeah, I think it was that, and people were expecting it to be more like
the
show. 80s show where everyone's wearing like pastels and stuff like that. So, and said they got this very serious, violent movie, but I love it. It holds up so well. I think it's actually like better now than it was when it came out somehow.
Yeah. You need that little bit of time, I guess. I think people want the Guy Ritchie Man from U.N.C.L.E. version of Miami Vice. Like you need the campy throwback, like just like writ large, find a dude who looks like, Don Johnson and throw it up on the screen again. Maybe that will get a completely different reaction. So talking about Heat, like, is it something, this movie, as far as action, like where do you see its influences going? Cause I like to, you talked about it being sort of an all timer and there are the big obvious ones, but are there any other films that you see and you're like, there's a lot of, someone really liked Heat when they watched this, when they were making this movie and had it in their mind, because.
Oh God. I feel like any bank robbery movie made after this is just taking from this. I mean, before this, I guess it was like any bank robbery movie before this was taking from Dog Day Afternoon. And then this came along and it just changed everything. I mean, the most obvious is, of course, The Dark Knight, which the first like 10 minutes of that movie are literally just Nolan remaking Heat, basically. And he's like said as much himself. But even, the tone of The Dark Knight in general is very, it's like Heat with Batman in it, which is such a strange idea when you say it out loud, but that's really what it is.
Yeah.
And It's, you know, there's a film called Place Beyond the Pines, which with Ryan Gosling, and stylistically, that's not really like what Mann does. It's a lot bright, like it's not as cold. It's a lot brighter. It's a lot more. It's a lot more outgoing. It's a more outgoing movie, whereas Mann makes very introspective movies. But the first half of that movie with Ryan Gosling and he's planning those robberies is you can just see that Heat influence in those scenes. I think even like the mask he wears is like that, the same sort of mask that they wear in the bank robbery scene. So even that is there.
And Ben Mendelsohn in Place Beyond the Pines is a great substitute for a John Voight. You know, like he just, Ben Mendelsohn looks like a crook. And people have taken that into a whole bunch of larger movie franchises now, but you know, a heavy smoking, you know, dodgy, you know, backyard mechanic, you know, kind of guy who has criminal connections like he does in that film is like, yep, yeah, that makes sense. That's a totally Mendo maneuver.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you a question because you know this movie so well. So do you think in some ways Heat, for lack of a better term, ruined Michael Mann for some people? Because I always have this feeling that when people think Michael Mann, they think of this movie. I'd say this is probably the most well-known movie. And this movie is so specific in the way it is. And while his other movies all have elements of this, you know, they always, he loves that shot of the lone man staring across the landscape and all that, you know, that sort of thing. But I feel that like a casual moviegoer who knows Michael Mann from this, if they sat down and watched Last of the Mohicans, they would be like, what the hell is this? I always wonder if like this has pigeonholed him in the eyes of some people. And like, they immediately associate this with his work. And they see other stuff, and
that's a great.
You know,
it's a great question. It's a great question. I've found there's two kind of modes. I agree. It's like once you have an amazing movie, that especially in recent years, like where people go back and have talked a lot about Heat and been like, "Wow, this movie's pretty much perfect," you know, pillar to post. I had a lot of people who weren't even aware, you know, in my community, maybe it's in Australia, Last of the Mohicans was huge in Oz. It was a huge movie. Like, it was absolutely massive. And so a lot of people who know Last of the Mohicans sort of then rolled into Heat as like a huge pivot, like, oh, we're going from like a period, a period film into, Native Americans and fighting and war and sort of, you know, that sort of thing into a real sort of heavy crime and heist genre. And so I've always had people going, oh, I love Michael Mann. I love the first two movies they say is I love Last of the Mohicans and I love Heat. You know, that's sort of the casual folk that I've sort of interacted with. And then you get the later film goers and who are ruined by Heat and The Insider because they think kind of everything after is good. They're like, oh, yeah, you know, Collateral's really good. Not much of a fan of Ali. You know, there's these two movies that come in two, you know, within, you know, the space of 4 years, sorry, that are just so massive in people's minds and their conceptions of like, this guy's a filmmaker, that almost every other movie just falls away. They're like, Heat and the Insider, amazing. You know, some of them don't even know that Black Hat exists at this point. You know, the casual movie goer, they're like, didn't come out of the movies. I've never seen it around. I haven't heard anything about it. Maybe they stumbled upon it on Netflix because, you know, it came up because it's got Chris Hemsworth in there, but yeah, it's a real tough one, right? Because there are filmmakers who they make something that's just so unbelievably perfect that they just can't. You know, I think that, you know, in a more contemporary sense, it ruined poor Nicholas Winding Refn for a lot of people as well recently. You know, I think of Drive and people went to Only God Forgives looking to see Drive. And that movie could not be less Drive if it tried. It's like we are not making the same kind of, we're not even on the same planet as what you guys would have seen in that. So yeah, I think, I don't know. It does have that effect, but Mann has those two for me. I think, you know, I love Heat and this podcast obviously, have demonstrated my unbridled affection for Heat. But I think The Insider may equally be his best film. It is in a completely different way. It is like, it's the movie that you could put on 3 Days of the Condor, All the President's Men, you know, Zabriskie Point and The Insider. You could put those four movies on and they would all make perfect tonal sense. Like they're you know, I think it's like the long lost brother of the 70s paranoia thriller, post-Watergate, that like is set in the 90s about corporate sort of malfeasance instead of government malfeasance. It's pretty peerless in that regard.
Yeah, the Insider is fantastic. Are you going to do the
no,
the Insider podcast
you
when you finish?
You heard it here first. No, I'm not going to do another. Look, that's also a good question. I think a lot of people are wondering what I'm going to do next. I can unequivocally say that it won't be. If I do another show like this, it will not be a Michael Mann podcast. This is my favorite. This is my favorite Michael Mann. This is my favorite Michael Mann film. This is the film that I measure all other films by, not just heist films, but all other films. Of like, if you're talking about perfection, sprawling, epic, scripting, aesthetic, mood, tone, rewatchability, this movie's got it all. It's got it all. But I don't think I want to subject people, Chris, to another Michael Mann podcast from me. I don't think I could do that to them. They've been so kind to listen to this show with me, so I don't want to subject them to anything further. I don't think.
Okay. All right. We'll see. Maybe you'll change your mind. Do this.
How doubtful is Chris?
The Insider cast.
How doubtful is Chris there? Thanks. Chris, I felt like I was being interrogated. This is us at Kate Manolini's right now. Chris is like, yeah, what the fuck is that? Barbecues and bowl games? That was his response just now. That was great. That was excellent. Yeah. Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see. But I right now, as we record episode 102, I don't think I could do another Michael Mann podcast. Not for anything other than to say that this is my favorite film of his, and I think it's the very best, the very best.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you seen Widows, Chris? I wanted to ask.
I have. I did. I saw that at TIFF, and that is another movie that is clearly,
oh yeah, yeah,
drawing from this. Yeah.
And I was wondering, yeah, because for me, I watched Widows, and I really enjoyed Widows too, and when I saw it, I thought of Heat. It's you know, obviously so different socio-political landscape that they're trying to cover, and contemporary time means that they're battling their own, a whole bunch of their own, you know, different topics and themes that are different. But one thing I thought that I really liked about Widows is that it kind of like establishes characters and lets the characters decide where the movie's going to go, almost like it, you know, it's in the genre, but you know, leaning into, you know, Elizabeth Debicki, you know, her character and her whole arc, and then you've got, you know, Viola in the lead there, and Michelle Rodriguez, and how their flaws direct how they approach it, I think is, you know, and in Neil's Crew's case, it's, you know, they're all so much more clinical and all much, so much more in the same direction, but I just found it really, you know, I had a lot of echoes of that. Oh, this is a human drama that's got a heist wrapped up in it, at the same time.
Yeah, definitely. And it also does that thing I was saying earlier where Heat takes the time to show you the mundane lives of all its characters. And that's one of the things I loved about Widows, is that even though that movie is packed with characters, every single character, even ones that should be minor, gets a lot of time to just develop and seem like a real person. And very few movies in, you know, that are trying to do that, do it so well. You know, a lot of, you know, if you have a movie that has an ensemble like that, more often than not, two or three of them are going to get left out. And Widows doesn't do that. It takes the time to give everyone a fair shake, and that really impressed me.
Huge supporting character. Like one of my favorite scenes, maybe of this year, or maybe of the last decade, is the Colin Farrell Robert Duvall face-off. Like where he's like, his character as the, you know, the father who's handing over the reins to this political, you know, this political career to his son, and his son's such an ingrate about the whole thing, and yeah, and the reaction, obviously it's hilarious. Like I think I wrote in my review that it'd make Joe Pesci blush, but I just love that that you get so much time with those guys to see their inner workings, you know, and really he could have just been a nice, and also starring Robert Duvall, and he's in it for three whole minutes, you know, but it gave him enough meat in that character so that he had a real nice little chunky role, did some great interactions. You know, I think The Wire and, you know, movies like The Heat do that so great is you have these real great individual scenes where you craft a character, and then sort of sporadically you'll just throw three or four characters who haven't had any interactions yet. You can just sort of see how those characters bubble together. You know, you're so used to the individual chemistry, and you see them bubble together, and you're like, oh, this is exciting, because they're all in the same room together. It's those really cool, you know, those really cool little moments. And, you know, as we're rolling into the 102nd minute, you know, it's the... we're about to see all the characters face off in this big sort of crackling heist.
Yeah, definitely.
Is this your favorite part of the movie, the heist that's coming up? Is this the part that you remember most fondly?
You know, when I was younger, when I was a young lad, not that I'm that old now, when I was a teen, definitely the heist was, you know, because it's the big shoot 'em up moment. But in later years, as weird as it sounds, I think my favorite scene now is the very first time where De Niro and Amy Brenneman's character, they go on their date, because I love it because De Niro is so awkward in that scene where he's just like talking about like medals. It's like the worst dating conversation. Like no one would care about that. You're just talking to them about like rare medals and stuff like that. And because he's not, you know, he doesn't interact with people. He interacts with his crew and that's it.
Yes.
And Amy Brenneman is so dead set on like drawing this guy out, and they go up and they're, you know, above the city and you see all the lights and they're just having this really clunky conversation. And I just love the way that plays out. I love that he's trying so hard to impress her and everything he says is just so lame, but she doesn't care. She's actually fascinated with like the lame stuff he says. And I don't know, there's just something about that scene that really, it's such a quiet moment in a film that's not that quiet. And I kind of love that.
Yes. Yeah, that is
what
a great.
What about
you? Absolutely agree. You know, as a teen and when I was first in this movie, it's both heists. And I think almost the opening heist, just because I was so shocked at, you know, just so shocked at how amazing it was and how like realistic it felt and authentic and scary, you know, especially when they make the decision to kill the drivers, you know, that had a real impact on me when I first saw the film. But as I've gone on, it has mutated so drastically. Like I think there's a big corridor, you know, maybe my favorite scene in the movie, you know, let's talk right this very second. There's probably two, but, the Donald Breeden scene after his first day of work where he's talking to Lillian, so it's Dennis Haysbert's character, and Kim Staunton, and there he's had a few drinks and he's in a bar and she's like, I met the owner, and you know, he's like, I did time for stuff that motherfucker does all day. You know, that scene has such a poignance because she's so, you know, Kim Staunton as an actor in that scene and the way that it's written, she does such amazing work at not saying things and not judging and not giving pressure to this person who's really vulnerable and really wants to fight, you know, really wants to have an excuse not to, I don't know, wants to have an excuse to watch their life burn down, you know, because that's what, that's the prison of all, you know, the virtual prison of all these inmates who come out and come back to the world, is that they've got to sort of, they're still kind of imprisoned in this box when they get out. And I think that this movie just does that so great. And it's such a shorthand. It's like one scene. I think that's the other thing that impresses me, is that the economy of just one scene, and you really get a feeling in your gut. So that as we watch the fallout in the very beginning of this minute, we watch the fallout. Dennis Haysbert looks completely like he looks cold. You know, and the camera work is so frantic there, where it's been so perfectly still with him in so many of the sequences. And at this moment, you watch him toss the hat down, and then the camera follows him through the kitchen and watch him, you know, throw this guy. This scene doesn't work without that other scene. So I think that that's probably one of my favorites, just because of how it's like a whole mini movie that's told in like three tiny scenes with this character. And it for me, it just like nails every single beat. Perfect economy. Like it's memorable. But the final scene for me is, that's probably my favorite. Just the final moments.
That is good.
The final moments, because it's got the weight of, you know, about 163 minutes of movie up until that point, and it just loads it up into this emotional moment, this crescendo, and then the score, and it's just doesn't.
Oh, it's so good. I'm getting chills right now just like thinking about it. Just that wide shot where they're holding hands and the music is kicking up and you see like the runway lights. It's so good.
Oh, it's unbelievably good. It's unbelievably good. It's it's something I'm not quite prepared for to how I'm going to actually talk about it when we get to that minute, because you know, after every minute of the show, after all the great guests, it's like getting to that minute is going to be like, whoa, that's going to be a big emotional moment. I don't know if I'm going to get through it. I'm going to have to like watch it a few more hundred times between now and then before I get to it. Well, look, Chris, thank you so much for being a part of the show, man. I really appreciate it. Guys, you know, do yourself a favor. Chris is at CEvangelista413 on the Twitters. And if you follow his stuff, it's great. I think your most recent one that I read, Chris, was your Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Review up on Slash. He's a staff writer there, so you'll see a bunch of his stuff. But that was a ripper of a review, and I'm really pleased that you could come onto the show. So thank you so much for being a part of it, man.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun. Thank you for having me. I really had a good time.
Awesome. Guys, thank you so much for listening again. OneHeatMinute.com is where you can find everything you need. In one of the upcoming episodes, I've had some really wonderful correspondence from a bunch of folk. I'm gonna take some time to call out in one of the upcoming episodes with a friend of the show. You would have heard him talking about Michael Madsen way back. We were talking about the original diner scene with Wayne Grow. The awesome Oscar Hillestrom is going to join me on the show in the upcoming episode to talk through some mailbag stuff, because there's just been some really phenomenal stuff from people writing in. So I wanted to make sure I give them their adequate shout out. I'm at Blakey's Batman, but One Heat Minute you can find everywhere. Spotify's, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find it. So check it out. Thank you so much again, Chris. Thank you guys for listening, and hopefully we'll catch you on another episode of One Heat Minute just around the corner.